onto the silver server in the hall, and I knew Ranger was home. I vacated the bed and sleepwalked into the dressing room. Not a lot of variety to my clothing choices.
Black everything.
Life was simple at Rangeman, and this was a good thing at this hour because I wasn't capable of complicated thoughts such as red shirt or blue shirt. I grabbed some clothes and hustled into the bathroom. When I came out, Ranger was eating breakfast at the small dining room table. "It looks like Ella's been here," I said to him.
"She brought you coffee and an omelet."
There was also a bread basket, plus a fresh fruit platter with raspberries, blackberries, and kiwi. Ranger had a bagel with cream cheese and smoked salmon. "How was your night?" I asked him.
"Uneventful. And yours?"
"Uneventful once I got here," I said. Ranger pushed back from the table and stood.
"What are your plans for today?"
"I want to take another stab at capturing Myron Kaplan. I'm hoping to get into my apartment to at least look around. And we have to sign him for the barbecue cook-off this afternoon. Tomorrow is the big day."
"I hate to point out the obvious, but so far as I know, you can't cook."
"It's about barbecue sauce," I said. "You take some ketchup and add pepper, and you've got sauce." Ranger grinned down at me.
"And this is why I love you."
He kissed me on the top of my head.
"I need to get some sleep. Take whatever car you want."
I finished my omelet, had a second cup of coffee, and headed out, grabbing the keys to the new Cayenne. It would be fun to drive the turbo, but it wasn't practical for hauling felons back to jail. I stepped into the elevator, pushed the button for garage level, and waved at the little camera in the corner up by the ceiling, knowing someone was manning a monitor looking at me. And that's when it hit me. The camera. I got to the garage and hit the button to go back to the 7th floor. I let myself into Ranger's apartment and yelled out to him, "I've got it!"
"I'm in the bedroom," Ranger said.
"Are you naked?"
"Do you want me to be?"
"No." That was a total lie, but I was too chicken to say yes. Even if a woman was sworn off men for life, she'd still want to see Ranger naked, and I was only sworn off men for the time being. He walked out to see me.
"What do you have?"
"Suppose our man gets into the house under some pretext, like maybe he's checking phone lines or cable lines, and then he plants a small camera in such a way that it gets a video of the owner punching in the code, and then a couple days later he comes back and gets the camera. Or maybe the camera sends a video out to an exterior location, and then he could get the camera when he commits the robbery. Could he do that?"
"I suppose it could be done, but there have been a lot of break-ins and no one has noticed a camera."
"Yeah, but these cameras are small, and maybe they get placed alongside other devices like smoke detectors or motion sensors."
"I like it," Ranger said. "Run with it."
"Would you mind if I went to some of your accounts and did a fast check of the areas where touchpads have been installed?"
"Make sure you show them your Rangeman ID and tell them you're a tech."
I rolled out of the garage and realized it was barely 7 o'clock. What on earth is a person supposed to do at this hour? I could go to breakfast at the diner, but I'd just eaten. My parents would be getting up around now, and it might be fun to see everyone fighting over the bathroom. But then, maybe not. I drove past the office. No lights on. Connie never came in this early. I cruised past Morelli's house. No one on the front lawn. His SUV parked at curbside. A single light on upstairs. Morelli was most likely moving a little slow this morning. I avoided my apartment building. It was too soon to get in, and I knew the sight of the fire-blackened windows would make me feel sad. That left me with Myron Kaplan. I returned to the center of the city and parked across the street from Kaplan's house. It was Monday morning, and some houses showed signs of life, but not Kaplan's. If I was a television bounty hunter, I'd kick the door down and go in guns drawn to catch Kaplan by surprise. I elected not to do this because it seemed like a mean thing to do to a guy who just wanted to return his teeth. I wasn't any good at kicking doors down, and I didn't have a gun. My gun was home in my cookie jar, and it wasn't loaded anyway. So I hung out in Ranger's brand new Cayenne watching Kaplan's house, telling myself I was doing surveillance. Truth is, I was snoozing. I had the seat reclined and was feeling very comfy inside the big car with the dark-tinted windows. I woke up a little after 9 and saw movement behind Kaplan's front window. I got out of the car and rang Kaplan's bell.
"Oh, jeez,"
Kaplan said when he saw me.
"You again."
I'll make a deal, I said. I'll take you to breakfast if you go to the police station with me when you're done.
I don't want to go to breakfast. I haven't got any teeth. I have to gum everything to death. And if I swallow big chunks of stuff, I get indigestion. Can't eat bacon at all.
You got your money back. Why don't you go to another dentist and get new teeth?
I called some other dentist and couldn't get an appointment. I think they're all in cahoots. I'm on a blacklist.
Dentists don't have blacklists.
How do you know? Are you sure they don't have blacklists?
Pretty sure.
Pretty sure doesn't cut it, Chicky.
Okay, we'll go to Plan B. Let's pay a visit to your old dentist.
The quack?
Yeah, let's talk to him about your teeth.
Do you have a gun?
No.
Then it's a waste of time,
Myron said.
You'll never get in.
Trust me, I'll get in. William Duffy, DDS, had an office suite on the fifth floor of the Krieger building. The waiting room was standard fare. Durable carpet, leatherette chairs, a couple end tables holding artfully arranged stacks of dog-eared magazines. A receptionist desk presided over one wall and guarded the door that led to Duffy.
That's her,
Myron said.
Miss Snippity.
Miss Snippity was in her 40s and looked pleasant enough. Short brown hair, minimum makeup, blue dental office smock with the name Tammy engraved on it.
Don't come any closer, Tammy said. I'm calling security.
That's not necessary, I told her. We aren't armed. I glanced over at Myron. We aren't, right?
My daughter took my gun away,
Myron said. We'd like to talk to Dr. Duffy, I said to Tammy.
Do you have an appointment?
No.
Dr. Duffy only sees by appointment.
Yes, I said, but you just opened for the day and there's no one in the waiting room.
I'm sorry, you'll have to make an appointment.
Fine, I said. I'd like an appointment for now. Do you have that available?
Dr. Duffy doesn't see patients until 10 a.m.
Okay, give me an appointment at 10 a.m.
That's not available,
she said, thumbing through her appointment book.
The next available appointment would be 3 weeks from now.
Here's a deal, I said to her. Poor Mr. Kaplan has no teeth. He's getting indigestion and he can't eat bacon. Can you imagine a life without bacon, Tammy?
I thought Mr. Kaplan was Jewish.
There's all kinds of Jewish,
Mr. Kaplan said.
You sound like my daughter. Maybe you want to tell me to get a colonoscopy, too.
Oh, my goodness, you haven't had a colonoscopy?
No one's sticking a camera up my rump, Mr. Kaplan said. I never like the way I look in pictures.
About Mr. Kaplan's teeth, I said to Tammy.
I have no appointments, Tammy said. If I break the rule for Mr. Kaplan, I have to break the rule for everyone.
Tammy was starting to annoy me. Just this once, I said. No one will know. I know Dr. Duffy is in. I can hear him talking on the phone. We want 5 minutes of his time. We just want to talk to him. 5 minutes.
No.
I told you,
Mr. Kaplan said to me.
She's snippety.
I put palms down on Tammy's desk, and I leaned in real close to her, nose to nose. If you don't let me in, I'm going to picket this building and let everyone know about the shoddy work Dr. Duffy is doing. And then I'm going to run a personal computer check on you and get the names of all your high school classmates and tell them you have relations with ponies and large dogs.
You don't scare me, Tammy said.
So that was when I went to Plan B and broke into my imitation of Julie Andrews singing The Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music. Dr. Duffy almost immediately stuck his head out the door.
What the heck?
We'd like to talk to you for a moment, I said. Mr. Kaplan is very sorry he held you up, and he'd like to discuss his teeth.
I'm not sorry, Mr. Kaplan said. This office gives me a pain in my behind.
You aren't armed, are you? Dr. Duffy asked.
No.
Come back to my office. I have a few minutes until my first appointment.
Myron stuck his tongue out at Tammy, and we followed Dr. Duffy down a short corridor, past dental torture rooms.
What would you like to discuss?
Dr. Duffy said, settling himself behind his desk. Do you still have Myron's teeth?
The police have them. They're evidence.
Can they be fixed so they fit him and they're comfortable?
They seemed to fit him when he left my office.
They were fine, and then a week later they were terrible,
Myron said.
You should have made an appointment to get them rechecked, Dr. Duffy said.
I couldn't get an appointment, Myron said. Your snippety secretary wouldn't give me one.
It would be really great if you could drop the charges against Mr. Kaplan and fix his teeth, I said to Duffy. He's not a bad guy. He just wants teeth. And for the record, your secretary is snippety.
I know she's snippety, Duffy said. She's my wife's first cousin, and I can't get rid of her. I'll see what I can do about getting the charges dropped, and I'll call you as soon as the police release your teeth.
That would be real nice of you, Myron said. I'm getting tired of oatmeal.
10 minutes later, we were in front of the courthouse. I have to check you in, I said to Myron, but Connie is on her way to bail you out again, and hopefully you'll be cleared of charges soon.
That's okay, Myron said. I didn't have anything to do today anyway.
I had my map and a summary of Ranger's accounts in front of me. My plan was to take a look at those accounts I tagged as high risk and those accounts that had already been hit. The first two houses were high risk. Each of the houses had a touchpad by the front door and a touchpad by the garage entrance. I couldn't find any evidence of filming in the touchpad areas. The next stop was the only commercial account on my list. It was the insurance company that had been burgled 4 days ago. I went directly to the rear entrance touchpad and looked to find possible lines of sight. Rangeman had installed a motion sensor over the door. This was a spot I'd choose if I wanted to snoop on the touchpad. I'd set the camera above the motion sensor, and it would look like it belonged there. There was no camera there now, but it looked to me like some of the paint above the motion sensor had flaked off. I asked building maintenance to get me a stepladder. I climbed up, took a closer look, and I was pretty sure something had been taped here. When the tape was removed, the paint had peeled away with it. I took a picture with my cell phone and thanked the maintenance guy for the ladder.
No problem, he said. The guy last week needed a ladder, too.
What guy?
The rangeman guy. What is it that you people keep checking?
Do you remember exactly when he was here?
Yeah, he was here twice, Monday morning and Wednesday morning.
Can you describe him?
Sure, he was young, maybe 18 or 19, slim, about my height, I'm 5'10", brown hair, brown eyes, sort of dark skin, nice-looking kid. Is something wrong?
No, but I'll check with the office to make sure we're not both doing the same route. Did you get his name?
Nah, he didn't tell me his name. At least, I can't remember.
I had to work hard not to run out of the building. I was so excited I could barely concentrate on driving. I screeched to a stop in the rangeman garage and danced in the elevator all the way to the 7th floor. I ran through Ranger's apartment, rushed into his bedroom, and jumped on the bed.
I've got it! I know how the robberies were done, and I know what the guy looks like!
I was straddling Ranger, who, fortunately, was under a quilt, because from what I could see, he looked deliciously naked. Ranger put his hands to my waist.
You've got my attention.
I noticed the paint was flaked away by a motion sensor that was opposite the touchpad at the insurance company, so I asked for a ladder, and sure enough, you could see where something had been taped to the wall.
Keep talking.
Are you sure you're listening? Your hand just moved to my breast.
You're so soft, Ranger said, his thumb brushing across my nipple.
I got a rush, followed by a lot of desire spread all over the place. Oh, I heard myself murmur. That feels good.
No, wait a minute. Get a grip.
Geez, I said, and I scrambled off the bed.
I almost had you, Ranger said.
I'm not ready for you. I'm currently off men.
Taking a hiatus.
Something like that.
Tell me more about my break-in expert.
The maintenance man said a rangeman employee had been in twice to check on the same motion sensor. I figure once to install the camera and once to remove it. He said the tech was 18 or 19 years old, around 5'10", brown hair, brown eyes, sort of dark skin, nice looking.
I don't have anyone that young, Ranger said, but I have several men who would fit the rest of the description and might look younger than they actually are.
So we're back to someone in-house. That's ugly. Ranger slipped out of bed.
I'm going to take a shower, and then I'll follow up on this.
I stared at him. He was naked, all right.
You're staring, he said, smiling.
I like to look.
Nice to know, Ranger said, but we should be able to do better than that for you.
I rummaged through Ranger's refrigerator while he took a shower. Fresh fruit, low-fat cottage cheese, orange juice, non-fat milk, white wine. No leftover pizza, no birthday cake. He was hot, but he didn't know much about food. I went down to the 5th floor, got an assortment of sandwiches and sides, and brought it all back to Ranger's apartment. Ranger strolled in and took a turkey club.
Did you get the name of the maintenance guy?
Mike. He'll be there until 3 o'clock today.
Do you want to ride with me?
I can't. I need to check on my fire damage and see if Lula needs help with the cook-off.
How are you doing with FDAs?
I have one open. I saved the worst for last. Cameron Manfred, armed robbery. Connie has him living in the projects. Works for Barbera Trucking.
I can go out with you tonight, Ranger said.
I pulled the Cayenne into the parking lot to my building and looked up at my windows. One window was broken. Looked like it was boarded over from the inside. All were ringed with black soot. Grimy water stains streaked down the yellow brick exterior. Water still pooled in the parking lot. What looked like the remains of my couch sat black and sodden alongside the dumpster. Sometimes it was good not to have a lot of expensive stuff, less to feel bad about when it got firebombed. I took the stairs and stepped into the second floor hall. Dylan had a couple giant fans working at drying the carpet. The door to my apartment was open, and Dylan was inside. Dylan was around my age, and he'd been the building super for as long as I could remember. He lived in the bowels of the building in a free but tomb-like efficiency. He was a nice guy who'd do anything for a six-pack of beer, and he was always mellow, in part from the small cannabis farm in his bathroom. He was a little sloppy in a hip, super-casual kind of way, and he tended to show some butt crack when he came up to fix your plumbing, but you didn't actually mind because his butt crack was kind of cute.
I hope it's okay I'm in your apartment, Dylan said. I wanted to get some of the waterlogged stuff out, and I have an insurance agent due any minute.
Fine by me, I said.
I appreciate the help with the furniture.
It was a lot worse last time you were firebombed, Dylan said. Most of the damage this time is from water and smoke. It didn't touch your bedroom at all, and it didn't get to your bathroom.
I blew out a sigh.
Yeah, he said. I'm sorry it didn't get to your bathroom. I thought about spreading some gasoline around and lighting a match in there, but I was afraid I'd blow myself up. On the bright side, I'm sure this isn't the last time you'll ever get firebombed, so maybe you'll have better luck next time.
There's a cheery thought.
Yeah, I'm a glass half-full kind of guy.
Speaking of glasses, I could use a beer.
I put some in your fridge. I figured you'd need a cold one.
I cracked open a beer and slogged through my apartment. The curtains were history. The couch I already knew about. The rugs were sort of melted and waterlogged. No biggie on the rugs. They weren't wonderful to begin with, and the building would replace them. My dining room table and chairs were grimy, but probably would clean up okay. Everything in my bedroom smelled like smoke. Dylan had another fan working in there. How long before I can move in? I asked him.
I've got professional cleaners coming in later today. The carpet's been ordered. I'll bring a couple of my buddies in and we'll do the painting. If all the moons line up right, I'd say a week.
Oh boy, another week with Ranger. And once he solved his break-in problem, he'd stop working nights and he'd go to bed early, with me. My first thought was yum. My second thought was help.
I stuffed Lula's clothes into a plastic garbage bag, carried it out to the Cayenne, and drove it to the office. Connie was out when I arrived, and Lula was at Connie's desk answering phones.
Vincent Plum Bail Bonds, she said. What do you want?
There was a pause, and Lula said, Another pause.
What did you say your name was? Did I hear Lou Ann Harmon? Because I'm not bailing out no Lou Ann Harmon. I suppose there's some good Lou Ann Harmons out there, but the one I know is a skank hoe. The Lou Ann Harmon I know told my customers I was overcharging for my services when I was working my corner. Is that the same Lou Ann Harmon?
Another pause.
Well, you can kiss my ass, Lula said,
and she hung up. Vinny stuck his head out of his office.
What was that?
Wrong number, Lula said. They wanted the DMV.
Where's Connie? I asked.
She went to write bond for your Mr. Kaplan, and she didn't come back yet.
Any word from Joyce?
Connie called and told her there was only one open file, and she told Connie you had breast implants and one of them diseases that you get from the toilet seat. I forget what it was.
Terrific. It looks like you're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm not dead. Nobody's even shot at me today. I think this is my lucky day. I bet we're going to win that cook-off tomorrow and catch the Chipotle killers and be on Easy Street.
I even stopped by the travel agency and got a brochure for my Panama Canal cruise. It's one of them boats that had a virus epidemic and everyone got sick, and now the rates are real low. I have a chance to get a good deal. Not that I need it anymore.
So you're still planning on entering the cook-off?
Damn skippy I'm gonna enter. We gotta go to Goosa Park and sign in this afternoon, and I gotta get my car, too. I was hoping you could give me a ride to your parking lot as soon as Connie gets back.
An hour later, I was back in my parking lot with Lula.
"There's my baby," Lula said. "Good thing I parked way at the end of the lot where nobody else parks. It didn't hardly get any soot on it, and it was out of the water spray. I'm going to take it to get detailed this afternoon so it looks fine when I win the contest and capture the bad guys. I'll probably be on television."
I pulled up next to the Firebird. Lula got out, unlocked her car, and slid behind the wheel. I waited for the engine to catch, and then I put the Cayenne in gear and drove out of the lot. I realized Lula was still sitting there, so I returned to the lot, parked next to her, and got out.
"Something wrong?" "It's making a funny sound. You hear it?"
"Are any of the warning lights on?"
"No. I'm going to take a look under the hood."
"Do you know anything about cars?"
"Sure I know about cars. I know there's an engine up there, and lots of other shit, too."
Lula popped the hood, and we took a look. "What are we supposed to be looking for?" I asked her.
"I don't know. Something unusual. Like, I once had a neighbor who found a cat in his car. At least he thought it used to be a cat. It was something with fur. It might have been a raccoon or a big rat or a small beaver. It was hard to tell."
"What's that package wrapped in cellophane with the wires?" I asked her.
"I don't know," Lula said, leaning closer. "I think that might be the problem, though, on account of its ticking."
"Ticking?"
"Oh, shit," Lula said.
We jumped back and ran for all we were worth and hid behind the dumpster. Nothing happened. Lula stuck her head out.
"Maybe that was a carburetor and it was supposed to tick," she said. "The carburetors tick."
Ba-boom! Lula's car jumped 5 feet in the air. The doors and hood flew off into space, and the car burst into flames. There was a second explosion, the Firebird rolled over onto Ranger's Cayenne, and the Cayenne caught. In a matter of minutes, there was nothing left of either car but smoking, twisted, charred metal. Lula's mouth opened, but no words came out. Her eyes got huge, rolled back into her head, and she keeled over in a dead faint. By the time the fire trucks arrived, the fire had played itself out. Lula was sitting propped against the dumpster, still not making sense.
"It... and... my... how?" she asked.
I was numb. These idiots were still trying to kill Lula, and I just destroyed another Cayenne. I'd been involved in so many fires in the past week, I'd lost count. I had no place to live. I had no idea what I wanted to do about my personal relationships, and I still couldn't get all the red paint out of my hair. I was a disaster magnet. I suddenly felt warm, and all the little hairs stood up on my arm. I turned and bumped into Ranger.
"This has to be a record," he said. "I've had that car for 24 hours.
"I'm sorry," I said, and I burst into tears. Ranger wrapped his arms around me and cuddled me into him.
"Babe, it's just a car."
"It's not just a car. It's me," I wailed. "I'm a mess."
"You're not a mess," Ranger said. "You're just having one of those emotional girl moments."
"Ugh," I said, and I punched him in the chest.
"Feel better?"
"Yeah, sort of."
He stepped back and looked at Lula. "What's wrong with her?"
"She's in a state. Her Firebird got blown up."
"She spends all this time with you and she's not used to cars getting blown up?"
"They aren't usually hers."
"Does she need help?"
"I think she'll come around," I said. "She's breathing now, and her eyes have mostly gone back into their sockets." I looked past Ranger and saw Morelli come on the scene. He picked me out of the crowd of bystanders and jogged over.
"Are you okay?" he asked me. "What's with Lula?"
"One of those cars used to be her Firebird."
"And the other used to be my Cayenne," Ranger said.
Morelli looked down at Lula.
"Does she need a medic?"
"Someone's gonna pay," Lula said.
And she farted. Morelli and Ranger smiled wide, and we all took a step back. "That should help," I said.
"Yep,"
Morelli said, still grinning.
"Always makes me feel better." I have to get back to the office, Ranger said. Ramon is in a car on the street if you need anything.
Morelli watched him walk away.
It's like he's Spider-Man with Spidey sense. Something happens and he suddenly appears, and then when the disaster is contained, he vanishes.
His control room listens to the scanners.
That was my second guess, Morelli said.
It was some sort of bomb, I said to Morelli. It was next to the engine, and it ticked. We were lucky we weren't killed.
It ticked? Bombs don't tick anymore. Where did they get their material, World War I surplus?
Maybe it was something rubbing against a moving part. I don't know anything about this stuff. It was making a noise that sounded like ticking. Anyway, these guys aren't smart.
I noticed. It makes it all the more annoying that we can't catch them.
How's Bob? I asked.
Bob is fine. His intestines are squeaky clean.
How are you?
I'm clean, too.
And then I couldn't help myself. The bitch part of me sneaked out. How's Joyce?
Joyce is Joyce, Morelli said.
Lula hauled herself to her feet.
I'm in a bad mood, she said. I'm in a mood to get me some Marco the Maniac. I've had it with this shit. It's one thing to kill me, but blowing up my firebird is going too far.
She looked at her watch.
We gotta get to the park. We gotta sign in.
We haven't got a car. The Buick is parked at range, man.
I'll call Connie. She can take us.
Chapter 16 Connie drove a silver Camry with rosary beads hanging from a rearview mirror and a Smith & Wesson stuck under the driver's seat. No matter what went down, Connie was covered. I was in the back seat with Grandma, and Lula was next to Connie. We were in the parking lot adjacent to the field where the cook-off was to be held, and we were watching competitors pull in, dragging everything from mobile professional kitchens to U-Hauls carrying grills and work tables.
I didn't expect this, Grandma said. I figured we'd come with a jar of sauce and they'd have some chicken for us.
We got a grill, Lula said, getting out of the Camry. We just didn't bring it yet.
Did you get a set of rules when you registered? Connie asked Lula.
No, I did the express register, being that the organizer was under some duress. And on top of that, I didn't have to pay no registration fee, so he might have been trying to save on paper.
A registration table had been set up at the edge of the lot. Competitors were signing in, taking a set of instructions, and leaving with a tray.
What's with the tray? Lula asked the guy in line in front of us.
It's the official competition tray. You put the food that's going to be judged on the tray.
Imagine that, Grandma said. Isn't that something?
We got our tray and our rules, and we stepped aside to read through the instructions.
It says here that we can't use a gas grill, Connie said. We need to cook on wood or charcoal, and we have to pick a category, ribs, chicken, or brisket.
I'm thinking ribs, Lula said. Seems to me it's harder to poison someone with ribs. I guess there's always that trichinosis thing, but you don't know about that for years, and I'm going to have to get a different grill.
All these people got tents and tables and signs with their name on it, Grandma said. We need some of that stuff. We need a name. How about Vincent Plum Bail Bondettes, Connie said.
I'm not being nothing associating me with Vincent Plum, Lula said. Bad enough I gotta work for the little pervert.
I want a sexy name, Grandma said, like Hot Vagina.
Flaming Assholes would be better, Lula said. That's what happens when you eat our sauce. Can you say Flaming Assholes on television?
This is big, I said, looking out over the field. There are flags with numbers on them all over the place. Every team is assigned a number.
We're number 27, Lula said. That don't sound like a good number to me.
What's wrong with it?
It's not memorable, Lula said. I want to be number 9.
My eye was starting to twitch, and I had a dull throb at the base of my skull. Probably they gave us Chipotle's number, I said.
Do you think?
Absolutely. He got decapitated, and you registered late, so you got his number. I hoped she bought this baloney, because I didn't want to hang out while Lula pulled a gun on the registration lady.
That makes sense, Lula said. I guess it's okay, then. Let's find our spot.
We walked down rows of flags and finally found 27. It was a little patch of grass between the red and white striped canopy of Burt's BBQ and the brown canopy of The Bull Stops Here. Our neighbors had set up shop and taken off.
From what I could see, that was the routine. Stake out your territory, get your canopy and table ready to go. Hang your sign. Leave for the day.
The instructions say we can get back in here at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Connie said. We can start cooking anytime we want after that. The judging is at 6 in the evening.
We got a lot of stuff to get together, Lula said. To start, we gotta find one of them canopies and a grill.
Not everybody has a canopy, Grandma said.
Yeah, but the canopy is classy, and it keeps the sun off the top of your head so you don't get a sunburn, Lula said.
We all looked at the top of Lula's head. Not much chance of sunburn there. Not a lot of sunlight reached Lula's scalp. I've got a couple hours free this afternoon, I said to Lula. We can go around and try to collect some of the essentials. We just have to stop by Range Man so I can get the Buick.
I'll go with you, Grandma said.
The first thing we got to do is get us a truck, Lula said. This Buick isn't going to hold a grill and all. I bet we could borrow a truck from Pookie Brown. He owns that junkyard and used car lot at the end of Stark Street. He used to be a steady customer of mine when I was a hoe.
Boy, Grandma said, you had lots of customers. You know people everywhere.
I had a real good corner, and I never had a business manager, so I was able to keep my prices down.
I didn't want to drive the length of Stark, so I cut across on Olden and only had to go 2 blocks down to the junkyard. The name on the street sign read C.J. Scrap Metal, but Pookie Brown ran it, and Scrap Metal was too lofty a description for Pookie's business. Pookie was a junk collector. He ran a private dump. Pookie had almost 2 acres of broken, rusted, unwanted crapola. Even Pookie himself looked like he was expired. He was thin as a reed, frizzy-haired, gaunt-featured, and his skin tone was gray. I had no clue to his age. He could be 40. He could be 110. And I couldn't imagine what Pookie would do with a hoe.
There's a girl, Pookie said when he saw Lula. I never get to see you anymore. I keep busy working at the bond office, Lula told him. I need a favor. I need to borrow a truck until tomorrow night.
Sure, Pookie said. Just take yourself over to the truck section and pick one out.
If you had a junker car or a truck and somehow you could manage to get it to CJ Scrap, you could park it there and walk away. Some of them even had license plates attached, and every now and then one got parked with a body in the trunk. There were 13 cars and 3 pickup trucks in Pookie's used car lot today.
Any of these trucks run? Lula asked.
The red one got a couple miles left, Pookie said. I could put a plate on for you. You need anything else?
Yeah, Lula said. I need a grill, not one of them gas grills either.
I got a good selection of grills, Pookie said. Do you need to cook in it?
I'm entered in the barbecue contest at the park tomorrow, Lula said.
So then you need a barbecuing grill. That narrows the field. How about eating? Are you going to personally eat any of the barbecue?
I don't think so. I think the judges are eating the barbecue.
That gives us more selection, Pookie said.
By the time Lula was done shopping at CJ Scrap, she had a grill and a card table loaded into her truck. The plate on the truck was expired, but you could hardly tell for the mud and rust. I followed her down Stark and parked behind her when she stopped at Maynard's funeral home.
I gotta make a pickup here, too. You stay and guard the truck, Lula said, sticking her head in the Buick's window. Bad as it is, if I leave it alone for 10 minutes in this part of town, it'll be missing wheels when I get back.
She looked at Grandma sitting next to me.
Do you have your gun?
You betcha, Grandma said. I got it right here in my purse, just like always.
Shoot whoever comes near, Lula said to Grandma. I won't be long.
I looked over at Grandma. If you shoot anyone, I'm telling my mother on you.
How about those 3 guys coming down the street? Can I shoot them?
No, they're just walking down the street.
I don't like the looks of them, Grandma said. They look shifty.
Everyone looks like that on Stark Street. The 3 guys were in their early 20s doing the strut in their ridiculous oversized pants. They were wearing a lot of gold chains, and one of them had a bottle in a brown paper bag, always a sign of a classy dude. I rolled my window up and locked my door, and Grandma did the same. They got even with the Buick and looked in at me.
Nice wheels, one of them said. Maybe you should get out and let me drive.
Ignore them, I said to Grandma. They'll go away. The guy with the bottle took a pull on it and tried the door handle. locked.
Are you sure you don't want me to shoot him? Grandma asked.
No, no shooting. They tried to rock the car, but the Buick was a tank. It would take more than three scrawny homies to rock the Buick. One of them dropped his pants and pressed his bare ass against the driver's side window.
You're gonna have to Windex that window when we get home, Grandma said.
I was looking at the funeral home, sending mental telepathy to Lula to get herself out to her truck so we could leave, and I heard the back door to the Buick get wrenched open. I hadn't thought to lock the back door. One of the men climbed onto the back seat, and another reached around and unlocked the driver's door. I reached for the ignition key, but my door was already open, and I was getting pulled out of the car. I hooked my arm through the steering wheel and kicked one of the guys in the face. The guy in the back was grabbing at me, and the third guy had hold of my foot.
We're gonna have fun with you and the old lady, the guy in the back seat said. We're gonna do you like you've never been done before.
Shoot, I said to Grandma.
But you said, just fucking shoot someone.
Grandma carried a gun like Dirty Harry's. I caught sight of the massive barrel in my peripheral vision and bang! The guy holding my foot jumped back and grabbed the side of his head, blood spurting through his fingers.
Son of a bitch, he yelled. Son of a fucking bitch, he shot off my ear.
I knew what he was saying because it was easy to read his lips, but I wasn't hearing anything but a high-pitched ringing in my head. The guy in the back seat scrambled out of the Buick and helped drag the guy with one ear down the street.
Do you think he'll be all right? Grandma asked.
Don't know. Don't care. The door to the funeral home opened, and Lula and a mountain of a guy came out carrying a bundle of what looked like aluminum poles, partially wrapped in faded green canvas. They threw the bundle into the back of the truck, and the guy returned to the funeral home. Lula said something to Grandma and me, but I couldn't hear.
What?
I said.
Home! Grandma yelled.
I followed Lula to my parents' house and dropped Grandma off. I think Grandma said they were going to put the truck in the garage so no one would steal the grill. Personally, I didn't think she had to worry about anyone wanting the grill. I drove through town to Range Man and went straight to Ranger's apartment. I kicked my shoes off and flopped onto his bed. When I woke up, I was covered with a light blanket, and I could see Ranger at his desk in the den. The ringing wasn't nearly so loud in my head. It was down to mosquito level. I rolled out of bed and went into the den.
Tough day? Ranger asked.
You don't even want to know. How was your day?
Interesting. I showed your maintenance man, Mike, file pictures of all Range Man employees remotely fitting his description, and he couldn't identify any of them. Our bad guy wears a Range Man uniform, but doesn't work here.
Could he be a former employee?
There were only two possibilities, and I got a negative on them.
Now what?
I have someone checking all the accounts for evidence of touchpad surveillance. He's also cataloging Range Man visits on those accounts.
It wouldn't be difficult to duplicate a Range Man uniform. Black cargo pants and black t-shirt with Range Man embroidered on it.
My men all know to show their ID when entering a house, but the accounts are lax at asking. Most people see the uniform and are satisfied.
I was suddenly starving, and there was a wonderful smell drifting in from the kitchen.
What's that smell?
Ella brought dinner up a half hour ago, but I didn't want to wake you. I think we've got some kind of stew.
We went to the kitchen and dished out the stew.
I've got a fix on Cameron Manfred, Ranger said. During the day, he works for a trucking company that's a front for a hijacking operation. It would be awkward to make an apprehension there. Lots of paranoid people with guns. Manfred leaves the trucking company at 5, goes to a neighborhood strip bar with his fellow workers until around 7, and then heads for his girl's apartment. He gives his address as the project's, but he's never there. It's actually his mother's address. We're going to have to hit him at the girl's place tonight.
If there isn't enough cover to tag him on the street, we'll have to let him settle and then go in after him.
I have to take a shift at 11, but we should have this wrapped up by then.
We were in a Range Man issue black Explorer. Ranger was behind the wheel, and we were parked across from a slum apartment building one block over from Stark Street, where Cameron Manfred was holed up with his girlfriend. It was a little after 9 at night, and the street was dark. Businesses were closed. Steel grates rolled down over entrances and plate glass windows. There was a streetlight overhead, but the bulb had been shot out. We'd been sitting at the curb for 10 minutes, not saying anything, Ranger in hunt mode. He was watching the building in the street, taking the pulse of the area, his own heart rate probably somewhere around reptilian. He punched a number into his phone. A man answered, and Ranger disconnected.
"He's there," Ranger said. "Let's go."
We crossed the street, entered the building, and silently climbed to the third floor. The air was stale. The walls were covered with graffiti. The light was dim. A small rat scuttled across Ranger's foot and disappeared into the shadows. I shuddered and grabbed the back of his shirt.
"Babe,"
Ranger said, his voice barely audible. There were two apartments on the third floor. Maureen Gonzalez, Manfred's girlfriend, lived in 3A. I stood flat to the wall on one side of her door. Ranger stood on the other side and knocked. His hand was on his holstered gun. A pretty Hispanic woman opened the door and smiled at Ranger. She was wearing a man's shirt, unbuttoned, and nothing else.
"Yes," she said.
Ranger smiled back at the woman and looked beyond her into the room.
"I'd like to speak to Cameron."
"Cameron isn't here."
"You don't mind if I look around?"
She held the shirt wide open.
"Look all you want."
"Nice," Ranger said, "but I'm looking for Cameron."
"I told you, he's not here."
"Bond enforcement," Ranger said. "Step aside."
"Do you have a search warrant?"
There was a sound of a window getting shoved up in the back room. Ranger pushed past Gonzalez and ran for the window. I turned and raced down the stairs and out the front door. I saw Manfred burst out of the alley between the buildings and cross the street. I took off after him, having no idea what I'd do if I caught him. My self-defense skills relied heavily on eye gouging and testicle rearrangement. Beyond that, I was at a loss. I chased Manfred to Stark and saw him turn the corner. I turned a couple beats behind him, and the sidewalk was empty in front of me. No Manfred. The only possibility was the building on the corner. There was a pizza place on the ground floor and what looked like two floors of apartments above it. The pizza place was closed for the night. The door leading to the apartments was open, the hallway dark, no light in the stairwell. I stood in the entry and listened for movement. Ranger came in behind me.
"Is he up there?"
"I don't know. I lost him when he turned the corner. I wasn't that far away. I don't think he had time to go further than this building. Where were you? I thought you'd be on top of him."
"The fire escape rusted out underneath me at the second floor. It took me a minute to regroup."
He looked up the stairs.
"Do you want to come with me, or do you want to keep watch here?"
"I'll stay here."
Ranger was immediately swallowed up by the dark. He had a flashlight, but he didn't use it. He moved almost without sound, creeping up the stairs, pausing at the second floor landing to listen before moving on. I hid in the shadows, not wanting to be seen from the street.
God knows who was walking the street.
Probably I should carry a gun, but guns scared the heck out of me. I had pepper spray in my purse, and a large can of hairspray, which, in my experience, is almost as effective as the pepper spray. I was concentrating on listening for Ranger and keeping watch on the street, and was completely taken by surprise when a door to the rear of the ground floor hallway opened and Manfred stepped out. He froze when he saw me, obviously just as shocked to find me standing there as I was to see him. He whirled around and retreated through the door. I yelled for Ranger and ran after Manfred. The door opened to a flight of stairs that led to the cellar. I got to the bottom of the stairs and realized this was a storeroom for the pizza place. Stainless steel rolling shelves marched in rows across the room. Bags of flour, cans of tomato sauce, and gallon cans of olive oil were stacked on the shelves. A dim bulb burned overhead. I didn't see Manfred. Fine by me. Probably the only reason I wasn't already dead was that he left his girl's house in such a rush he'd gone out unarmed. I cautiously approached one of the shelves, and Manfred stepped out and grabbed me.
"Give me your gun," he said.
My heart skipped a beat and went into terror tempo, bang, 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 knocking against my rib cage. "I don't have a gun," I said. And then, without any help from my brain, my knee suddenly connected with Manfred's gonads. Manfred doubled over, and I hit him on the head with a bag of flour. He staggered forward a little, but he didn't go down, so I hit him again. The bag broke, and flour went everywhere. I was momentarily blinded, but I reached back to the shelf, grabbed a gallon can of oil, and swung blind. I connected with something that got a grunt out of Manfred.
"Fucking bitch," Manfred said.
I hauled back to swing again, and Ranger lifted the can from my hand.
I'm on it, Ranger said, cuffing Manfred.
Jail's better than another 3 minutes with her, Manfred said. She's a fucking animal. I'm lucky if I can ever use my nuts again. Keep her away from me.
I didn't see you come down the stairs, I said to Ranger. It was a whiteout.
Any special reason you grabbed the flower?
I wasn't thinking. Manfred and I were head-to-toe flower. The flower sifted off us when we moved and floated in the air like pixie dust. Ranger hadn't so much as a smudge. By the time we got to the Rangeman SUV, some of the flower had been left behind as ghostly white footprints, but a lot of it remained.
I honestly don't know how you managed to do this, Ranger said. Paint, barbecue sauce, flour, it boggles the mind.
This was all your fault, I said. Ranger glanced over at me, and his eyebrows raised a fraction of an inch. You could have taken him down in the apartment if you hadn't spent so much time staring at his naked girlfriend. Ranger grinned.
She wasn't naked. She was wearing a shirt.
You deserved to fall off that fire escape.
That's harsh, Ranger said.
Did you hurt yourself? I asked him.
Do you care?
No, I said.
Liar, Ranger said.
He ruffled my hair, and flour sprang out in all directions. Manfred said something to Ranger in Spanish. Ranger answered him and assisted him into the back seat of the Explorer. What did he say? I asked Ranger.
He said if I let him go, I could have his girl.
And your answer?
I declined.
You'll probably regret that as the night goes on, I said to him.
No doubt, Ranger said.
Ranger and I had Manfred in front of the docket lieutenant. It was a little after 10 and things were heating up. Drunk drivers, abusive drunk husbands, and a couple drug busts were making their way through the system. I was waiting for my body receipt, and Morelli walked in. He nodded to Ranger and grinned at me in my whiteness.
I was at my desk and Mickey told me I had to come out and take a look, Morelli said.
It's flour, I told him.
I can see that. If we add some milk and eggs, we can turn you into a cake.
What are you doing here? I thought you were off nights.
I came in to cover a shooting. Fred was supposed to be on, but he got overexcited at his kid's ball game and pulled a groin muscle. I was just finishing up some paperwork.
Mickey Bolin joined us. Bolin worked crimes against persons with Morelli. He was 10 years older than Morelli and counting down to his pension.
I wasn't exaggerating, right? Bolin said to Morelli. They're both covered with flour.
I'd tell you about it, I said to Bolin, but it's not as good as it looks.
That's okay, Bolin said. I got something better anyway. The rest of Stanley Chipotle just turned up at the funeral home on Hamilton.
We all stood there for a couple beats, trying to process what we just heard.
He turned up, Morelli finally said.
Yeah, Bolin said. Someone apparently dumped him on the doorstep. So, I guess someone should talk to the funeral guy.
I guess that someone would be me, Morelli said.
He looked at his watch.
What the hell? The game's over now, anyway.
I need to get back to Range Man, Ranger said to me. If you have an interest in Chipotle, I can send someone with a car for you.
Thanks. I don't usually get excited about seeing headless dead men, but I wouldn't mind knowing more.
I can give her a ride, Morelli said. I don't imagine this'll take long.
Chapter 17. Eddie Gazzara was standing in the funeral home parking lot waiting for Morelli. Eddie is married to my cousin Shirley the Whiner. Eddie is a patrolman by choice. He could have moved up, but he likes being on the street. He says it's a uniform, no choices to make in the morning. I think it's the free donuts at Tasty Pastry.
I was the first on the scene, Gazzara said when we got out of Morelli's SUV. The drop was made right after viewing hours. Morton shut the lights off, and 10 minutes later, someone rang the doorbell. When Morton came to the door, he found Chipotle stretched out and frozen solid.
Eli Morton is the current owner of the funeral home. For years, Constantine Stiva owned the place. The business has changed hands a couple times since Stiva left, but everyone still thinks of this as Stiva's funeral home.
Where is he now?
Morelli asked.
On the porch. We didn't move him.
Are you sure it's Chipotle?
He didn't have a head, Gazzara said. We sort of put two and two together.
No ID?
None we could find. Hard to get into his pockets, what with him being a big popsicle.
We'd been walking while we were talking, and we got into the stairs that led to the funeral home's wide front porch. I recognized Eli Morton at the top of the stairs. He was talking to a couple uniformed cops and an older man in slacks and dress shirt. A couple guys from the EMT truck were up there, too. The body wasn't visible.
Maybe I'll wait here, I said.
It's not so bad, Gazzara told me. He's frozen stiff as a board. All the blood's frozen, too, and the head was cut off nice and clean.
I sat down on the bottom step.
I'll definitely wait here.
I'll get back to you, Morelli said, walking the rest of the way with Gazzara.
The medical examiner's truck rolled past and pulled into the lot. It was followed by a TV news truck with a dish. I saw Morelli glance over at the news truck and move a couple of the uniformed guys from the porch to the lot to contain the media. I sat on the step for about a half hour watching people come and go. Finally, Morelli came back and sat alongside me. How's it going? I asked him.
The forensic photographer just finished, and the ME is doing his thing, and then we're moving the body inside to a meat locker. He's starting to defrost.
Is he staying here for the funeral?
Eventually. The body will have to go to the morgue for an autopsy first, and then it'll get released for burial. Right now, I need someone to identify the body.
Do you think it might not be Chipotle?
This is a high-profile case, and there was no identification on the body.
Aren't there tests for that sort of thing?
Yeah, and they'll do them when they do the autopsy. I just need someone to eyeball this guy for a preliminary ID.
His sister?
We haven't been able to reach her.
One of his ex-wives? His agent?
They're all over the place. Aspen, New York, L.A., Santa Fe.
So who are you going to get?
Lula.
You're kidding.
She saw him get murdered, Morelli said. I'm hoping she remembers his clothes and enough of his build to give me an ID. I've got two television trucks and a bunch of reporters sitting in the lot. If I don't give them something, they'll make something up. So I'm going to have to talk to them. Before I do that, my chief wants an ID.
Have you called Lula?
Yeah, she's on her way over.
There was activity at the top of the porch, and Morelli stood.
Looks like they're getting ready to move the body, he said. I'm keeping it on ice here for Lula. I thought it was easier than trying to get her to go to the morgue. I'd appreciate it if you could wait here for her and bring her in when she arrives.
Sure. 20 minutes later, I saw my father's cab drive into the lot. The cab parked, and Lula got out and waved to the knot of newsmen standing by one of the trucks.
Yoo-hoo, I'm Lula, she said to them. I got called in to identify the body.
I jumped up and sprinted to the lot, intercepting the horde that rushed at her.
Lula, we'll talk to you later, I told them, herding Lula out of the lot. She has to talk to the police first.
Do I look okay? Lula asked me. I didn't have a lot of time to fix my hair, and I didn't have my full wardrobe at my disposal.
You look fine, I said. The silver sequin top and matching skirt is just right for an evening decapitation identification.
You don't think it's too dressy?
On everyone but Lula and Tina Turner, yes.
On Lula and Tina Turner, no.
It was perfect.
I thought there might be television here, Lula said. You know how television always likes a little bling.
Is my father waiting for you?
No, I drove myself. Everyone was asleep, and I didn't want to bother no one, so I helped myself to the cab. I would have rather taken your mother's car, but I couldn't find the key.
We went up the stairs and into the foyer. No problem for me now. I was real brave once the body was removed. Morelli ambled over.
Thanks for coming out to do this, he said to Lula.
Anything to help the police, Lula said. Are the television cameras in here? Is that a tabloid photographer over there?
No television cameras, Morelli said, and the photographer is the department's forensics guy.
Huh, Lula said. Let's get this over with then. It's not like I was sitting around thinking I'd like to go look at a dead guy with no head. I got sensibilities, you know.